Good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to introduce Patrick Bolstrom, Chair of ESSAC, to if we could just cease any private conversations now, please. Thanks. To give you an update on ESSAC activities over the last few months. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me and ESSAC to come here. We have ESSAC members are not really here on site yet, but we have some. Can ESSAC members stand up, please? What are you doing here? Okay. Yeah. So it's also okay, order. Myself into that trap. I'm sorry. I should have reminded him the result of Ireland, Argentina, and rugby. Or maybe not. It's also the case. Ireland did lose big time. 43-20 to Argentina. Yeah. So it's also the case that I have excellent, or we in ESSAC do have excellent support staff. Can you please? So you are here. Oh, look at that. Cool. So all of us together have managed to not only do a lot of work, we have also produced a brand new slide deck with new graphics. Next slide, please. So the joke aside, one of the more important reasons why we have been working quite hard on this is also because of input from you and ALAC that you find it being important for people to understand what the various organizations and ICANN is doing. And of course, being an advisory committee, we find it being really important that people understand who we are, or else people might not take our advice for what we believe they are. So we are currently 35 members. We're appointed by the ICANN board. And our charter is just like it has been for many, many years now, to advise ICANN community and board on matters relating to the security and integrity of the internet's naming and address allocation system. So it's ICANN community and the board. And this is really important when we go to sort of the next slide when we look at what ICANN is dealing with. But this is us. We try to ensure that we have expertise in a very wide variety of areas. And you see down to the left what we believe we need expertise in at the moment: addressing and routing, DNS, DNSSEC, domain registry, registrar operation, DNS abuse, cybercrime, internationalization, both regarding domain names and data, internet service and access provider issues, and of course, ICANN policy and operations. Things that we have strengthened the last couple of years have to do with cybercrime issues and addressing and routing. We have 73 publications since 2002, and we divide them in reports, advisories, and comments. And then, of course, we try to do outreach like this meeting to inform the community of what we're doing. Next slide, please. We look at what ICANN is doing to understand where we fit. For us is to tie our charter to the mission and core value of ICANN. And what we find in the ICANN's mission and core values are, one, to ensure the stable and secure operation of the internet's unique systems, and two, to preserve and enhance the operational stability, reliability, and security, and global interoperability of the internet. So what we are trying to do is we find that we are chartered to be an advisory committee to ICANN board and the community to ensure that the organization and community follow and do actions that do not break this mission and core value. That's the connection. And to talk briefly about the CCWG and this whole discussion about membership and revoking and throwing out board members and budget and all of those kind of things. By the way, Julie is one of our champions on doing that work. What I just described, the match between our charter and the ICANN's mission and core value, then sort of throwing out board members or whatever, that's secondary, that sort of operations, which of course is also why we are more looking into the square that you see to the right, that one of the HRT2 recommendations were to change the bylaws to ensure that ICANN board must take advice from the advisory committees into account. That is much more important for us than other kind of things, because if it is the case that ICANN board do not, then they have a breach of the bylaws or whatever, and then we take for granted that you, the rest of the community, have come up with a mechanism to how to handle the case when ICANN don't follow its own bylaws. So we more think about setting up the rules that ICANN is supposed to follow when they're doing what they are supposed to do. So if we look at the publication process we are using, which is the one down left, we form a work party on an interesting topic based on actions that we do. We come up with things ourselves, or it might be case that someone asks us a question, like ALAC could do that. Please. There have not been many questions from ALAC lately. Julie, what do you think? When did you hear last from ALAC? The real question. Well, anyways, joke aside, GAC has asked us questions, and I can board us ask us questions. So please send us questions if it is you have any. We do some research and writing, and we might conclude that, no, there's nothing we can say here. We cannot give recommendations that actually will make the world better. Just describing something that is a problem is something we don't really want to do. We want to really make a recommendation that makes things better. Regarding if it is the case the recommendation is to the board, then we have a special thing which you see to the right, that we submit the advice to ICANN board. The ICANN board acknowledges and studies the advice. The board take formal action on the advice, and the formal action can be one of four things. Injection into the policy development process, one of the PDPs they have. It might be a request to staff to implement it with public consultation, just like normal. It could be dissemination of advice to the affected parties. It might not be inside ICANN. It might be other external parties, like, for example, the issue with certificates that we issued an advice on. The ICANN took contact with the CA Browsers Forum and made some agreements there. Or it might very well be the case that ICANN board choose to do something else, a different solution, and explain why the advice is not followed. And one example of that has to do with namespace collisions, where ICANN took a different path forward than what ESSA did, which resulted us making T-shirts. Next slide, please. Current work parties include working on the DTLD, a new DTLD program review, registrant that I will talk a little bit more about later. We have the DNSSEC workshops, both for newcomers on Monday and then also more like for people that have been working with DNSSEC for a while on Wednesday. We have one newly created work party on IPv4 address exhaustion. It is increasingly problematic now when we literally have run out of IPv4 address in many areas of the world. We are explicitly looking at tracking board advice more carefully because with the previous pictures, you understand that it's pretty important to keep track of all the advice we give. We, together with ICANN board and ICANN staff, has identified that large portion of the issues we have with our advice not be taken into account properly is simply just because we have not had any tracking system. So it's not the case that a tracking system solves the problem, but it's very, very difficult to rely on individuals keeping track of things and advice. And thanks to the good staff we have, we actually have not dropped so many balls, but a few of the unfortunately have taken a little bit too long time. And this is absolutely no finger pointing there. We just see that we need to do better work, all of us together, and we are working on that. The recent publications include SAC3 comments on root zone key signing key rollover plan. I will talk about that a little bit later because that's a newly published. And then a large portion of the latest documents, of course, have been formal and informal input as a charging organizations to the CWG and CCWG. We have our own webpage, sac.icann.org. We are trying to use this new social media thing. They never catch up. And new thing, we have started to make videos. Woohoo! So you can even watch us on TV trying to explain what we are doing. And of course, we not only have the videos that we have made, like we also have other people that are interviewed and made some videos. We actually have now started to really try to come up with better documentation on specifically when we're doing things which are best practices, feel that we should do more outreach. And that is specifically something that I lots of good input from you and ALAC. Let me just emphasize that. We have tried to listen. I think actually video is something that actually was by ALAC, if I remember correctly. Because we would never come up with such nutty ideas. So next slide, please. So that was a description of ESSAC. Is there anyone that have any questions on ESSAC in general? Or we should move into more substantial material. Okay, let's move on. So I already listed and talked about the various things that we're doing at the moment. Next slide, please. The milestones we have is that we just published SAC 73. We have the DNSSEC workshops at this ICANN 54. In the next quarter, we envision releasing the document on registrant protection and credential management that I will present shortly for you, because that is one of the few documents that we are presenting during our development of the document. Otherwise, we are, because of various disclosure issues, we are not talking much with the community about the document that we are producing or issues we're working on. In that case, we are, just because we wanted to have input on what the best practices are, we wanted to know what the industry was doing. And then first quarter 2016, we think that we are done with advisory energy program review and, of course, the workshops at ICANN 55. So if we go to SAC 73, comments on the root zone key signing key rollover plan, but please, it's a very simple document, and it is simple because of two reasons. There is a design team for KSK rollover that have come up with a plan where they wanted to have input from the community, and we have already published a document on KSK rollover in the form of SAC 63, which is 10 documents ago. In SAC 63, we discussed the key management of the root zone, motivations for it, basically why it's a good thing to do, what the risks are, the various mechanisms that are available, and then we try to quantify the risk of a failed update and DNS response size consideration, a couple of other kind of things. So we basically went through a couple of various risks and mitigation mechanism and various issues, including saying that there are always risks, but yeah, anyways, without regional, it's important to do this in a proper way. Slide, please. It's specifically the case that we in SAC 63 have five recommendations for ICANN and the Root Zone Management Party. And what we did was that we took SAC 63, which we wrote, paired that with the report that the design team wanted to have comments on. And unfortunately, we don't see that the design team, we don't see that they or how they address those five recommendations. It might very well be the case that they actually did look at those recommendations, something else. But as this is advice to ICANN, we don't think that is good enough. So SAC 73 is actually a very simple document that with SAC 63 essence, where we ask ICANN to please go through those five recommendations and let us know what they have done, if anything, or why they did choose something else. Any questions on that? Say that regarding, and I'm looking a little bit on Jeff. Yes, hello, Jeff. And Jeff is part of this design team and also an ESSAC member. I think that it might well be the case that specifically for root key rollover thing, it's something that can be really important for ALAC, and maybe there is some outreach things and that is that could be interesting there. So I think ALAC, even though you might think, oh, it's just a technical thing that the technical community take care of, no, that's not the case. If this goes bad, it will affect quite a lot of parties. So I encourage you and ALAC to actually keep track of what's happening here regarding root key rollover. Is that a good summary?
Thanks, Patrick. Yes. You may not know it, but around about 1 in 3 users of the internet actually do validation of the keys one way or another with DNS. So over the last couple of years, quite quietly and quite efficiently, DNS is now becoming more and more secure. So when we talk about rolling the keys, we're talking about rolling the entire chain of trust to a system. Potentially, a lot of folk, if we ever do this wrong. So there's an awful lot of care and attention being paid to this exercise. Make sure that as we change that trust anchor, right, don't break the internet on the way through.
All of you have probably gone to websites and they said, I'm sorry, I don't know this certificate. Do you want to continue install an exception? Think about that happening with anything anyone is doing on the internet, and that it suddenly happens. And while some people are trying to find more oxygen, oh, there's a question. Sorry, please.
Yeah. Sorry. Sarah Leon, for the record, we have a question from remote participant Marie McCurtry. What is the most critical issue with respect to security and stability of the internet, and how could the AI?
How long is a string? There are many, many important things, and I think the overarching issue that we in ESSAC is dealing with now is, first of all, the root key rollover, but as you will see, if you go to the next slide, best practices for preserving, sounds a little bit sort of nerdy, the text itself. This document is about is actually what are the best practices to ensure that passwords, people that are domain name holders, don't get lost. can break into Redis and registrars. So what we are looking at to answer the question very much now is the best practices. We are really nervous that we have so many websites, so many services out there that simply are not run in an effective way and that create secondary effects. And ALAC, of course, have, just like Internet Society and others, which have wide outreach, wide community, it's really important to sort of explain to people what they can do, not as academic papers, can they really do? So if you look at, for example, the best practices for red hand protection and password, there are a lot of things that people talk about in academic papers, like doing this and that. But in reality, when we look at, for example, libraries for PHP and WordPress or whatever, you cannot do that in real life. So what is easy to do? What are the cheap wins when you try to secure things? So that is where I think ALAC can help, which I think you also are by referencing a lot of the work that we are doing. So what we have been looking at are the various attacks where TLD registries, this is not only DTLDs, of course. TLD registries have been attacked. People are taken over domain names by breaking into the registry, doing social engineering to the registrar, by simply guessing passwords, and these are actually pretty serious things. It is not a good thing if the Google domain name in a country is taken over by someone, fools people to use the wrong something that is not Google. That can have pretty serious secondary effects. So what this advisor is talking about is to give this advisor is trying to give a background about the problem and is trying to give specific best practice guidelines that will help registrants and registrars and the ones that operate services for registrants and registrars to simply do the right thing. And on top of that, it also gives some recommendations for ICANN and the community regarding kind of issues. Next slide, please. Yes, question.
Jeff mentioned before that 1 in 3 users somehow uses DNSSEC and validates these keys and therefore may, in fact, be impacted. Are you planning on looking at any statistics here as to the number of domain names that are stolen, broken into, whatever, and the causes and the effects of that? I mean, as chair of the ALAC and have someone who had chaired a PDP on a related issue, I get a fair number of complaints of people saying such and such registrar stole my name or various other things. And it's not clear if these are one-off cases or this is just the tip of the mountain that actually get to me.
To make you happy, I say yes. In reality, have been doing, and what you will see in this report, is that we have been looking specifically at point 3.20 of the RIA. If you remember the RIA on top of your head, the RIA requires in 3.20 registrars to report breaches to ICANN. And what we have investigated is, of course, why is the recommendation there and what is that information used for? And one of the things that we have discovered is that maybe it is the case that it would be good if ICANN actually publish some statistics from that reporting. They is just reported and then nothing else. On the other hand, we have also been looking at whether it is possible to, from that data, also disclose who was breached. And under the current RIA and legal situation, we have found that that is probably not possible, at least if we can publish the statistics so we understand whether it's a one-off issue or we see changes and trends in the various breaches, that would be a good thing. Not done today either.
In many of the cases that come to me, people say the registrar claims I made the request because they have no evidence the password was changed. So I don't even know in those kind of cases if they're reported as breaches.
And of course, having ICANN publish statistics on the breaches gives us a picture of whether breaches actually are reported. Because, as if you take another example, which is completely unrelated, but still, if you look at the Google transparency report from various countries, if you, for example, compare countries that should be equivalent, one would think Sweden and Norway. And they're completely different numbers. Or if you get numbers from, for example, the Swedish police on how many requests they claim they've asked Google, and then you ask Google how many requests have the Swedish police asked you, and those two numbers differ, gives some indication that we need to dig further. In that example for Sweden, it's actually approximately the same number from the police and Google, luckily enough, but I was a little bit nervous the numbers were released. In this case, with ICANN at 3.20 for RIA, we just give very, very easy recommendations because we think and hope our recommendation can be the trigger for that kind of discussion. Don't really know what the final answer is. Okay. So we're looking at credential lifecycle best practices for create and distribute passwords, etc. How to store them, how do you store backups, how do you revoke them. And then we talk about also credentials you need to authenticate an identity, domain names. Talk a little bit about two-factor authentications, what is good and what is bad, and give some suggestions on what actually can be done. The recommendations are a few, but on the other hand, the document itself contains lots and lots of what I think personally, lots of really good material for anyone that is a registrar and registry, and I think people can actually take a lot of, it would be good for people to read this. And that's it. Julie, yes.
So, Patrick, Julie Hammer, I was on that work party, and one of the things I just wanted to add was that that document hopefully will be released within the next couple of weeks. But as a follow-on, what one of the things the work party wants to do is produce a few one-pages, like a one-pager of best practice guidelines for registries, another one-pager best practice guidelines for registrars. And I think what we should also look at doing is a one-pager best practice or guidelines for registrants, where we can say, here are the things you should be asking your registrars when you're buying your domain name or renewing your domain name, and the things that they should be looking for from their registrar, and if they don't get them, go to another registrar.
Just a question, but... Holly Raish. Ages ago, many, many numbers back, it was a really useful SSAC document about how registrars can do or tell their registrants. Are you going to roll in some of that advice? Because that advice is very useful for registrars, but also for registrants. But I'm thinking if you're doing fact sheets, that actually has a lot of also useful information.
Julie Hammer speaking. I think I'm trying to remember the one, but I suspect Holly's on a different topic, and what we want to do is produce a one-pager on this topic and not sort of roll in other topics. I might follow up with you afterwards about perhaps seeing if that's appropriate to do for any of our other reports.
So we have. It is correct that we have written a couple of documents regarding registrars and the best practices and other kind of things. So yes, it might very well be that we are going to do sort of a compilation of those kind of things, like with registrars. But on the other hand, at the moment, no, we are not thinking about rolling it. Instead, we see these as areas. But on the other hand, that could be an excellent work item for example, you and ALAC to maybe sort of take our material from this. To explain the relationship between the registrant and the registrar, and I'm pretty sure that we in ASSAC could help with reviewing.
I think before I take Olivia's question, there's another one from a remote.
Carolyn, for the record, actually we have two remote participant questions. Okay, one is from Alexei Antilis from Internauta, Venezuela. What can adopt to politicas attacks or kidnappings domain name theft. What role does the jurisdiction of the directors or registrar we know of such violations as well as technical measures not only by ICANN but the states?
That's actually a complicated question that needs sort of could be a whole session. Let me answer this way. Yes, if it is the case that there are breaches, there is quite often, first of all, a practical issue that we in ESSAC are working on to sort of come up with recommendations of ensuring that these kind of events do not happen. If it is the case that the event itself, breach, is actually criminal activity, then it's a law enforcement issue that need to be handled the way those kind of issues are managed, including cross-border issues. We in ESSAC, we have been sort of, if I call it like host of law enforcement participation here in ICANN, together with ICANN security team. Nowadays, law enforcement do have their own work party in GAC, where they do their work together with ICANN security team. So there is specific discussions on where the boundary is between law enforcement activities and activities. But we from ESSAC, we are staying within sort of the practical issues. On the other hand, a lot of things we are looking at is, of course, come up with policies and suggestions that helps law enforcement do whatever they are doing.
So I have a question. I have in the queue Olivia, Vanda, second remote, and then Cheryl, and then I'll close the queue. No, not Cheryl. Right, we'll close the queue with the second remote then. So Olivia, thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. Olivia, can I have a question on something else then? First, a comment. I heard about the Swedish police and Swedish. Very happy that you're still able to be with us. Joke. Okay. So the question itself is relating to IPv6. And I know we haven't spoken about IPv6 for a while. The applicant guidebook had a number of questions. Reliability of the name servers, at least two name servers needed to be compatible. Or on IPv6, who is, website, etc. It was not, to my belief, it was not made mandatory at the end, but it seems that some of the new GTLDs have IPv6, are compliant, and I wondered whether the ESSAC was planning to do any survey of doing, as these days we're seeing more and more people use
IPv6. If you look at TLDs, we are today having 1,080 TLDs, out of which 1,047 do have IPv6. So I think to some degree that is sort of taken care of. The problem with IPv6 has more to do with whether the name servers and the registrars that the end user is using, whether that can handle IP, and there is lower. And we don't have any protocol police that can ensure that. So I think to answer your question, I don't think a stronger policy there would help to raise the number from 1,047 closer to 1,080 level. We don't have an issue with that. Jeff is, of course, having a little bit different view there, but we can talk about. I think Olivia and Jeff can talk a little bit about.
Well, being in a region where mostly the registrants are using resellers, because we don't have much registrars, and resellers do not have agreements, and there is a lack of knowledge. So when you plan to make this page, please remember that we need to address to ISPs that become resellers or general resellers that are in the field around without a huge knowledge. In the entire LAC region, that's the reality. We have resellers, not the registrar. We have entire region 17 small registrars, and that's it. So that is something that I ask you to think about. I have been this year circulating around talking with all registrars around about ISPs, about new technologies, new name, new domain, new TLDs, and how to deal with that. But I have facing a lot of ignorance about what is going on in that area and how they really need to behave to protect registrants. Thank you.
Very much. First of all, before I make the statement, I personally do have a pretty strong view here. Let me say that I think the whole discussion about resellers has been, I think personally, this is not an ESSAC view, has been derailed just because people use the term reseller. From my perspective, if it is the case that you have a registrar that is accredited or by a TLD of any kind or accredited by ICANN, is and should be the responsibility for that registrar to ensure that all requirements that all requirements on them, including norms, not only country requirements, and that they are fulfilled regardless of whether the domain name is sold directly or indirectly, whether there is one step or multiple steps of entities between whoever is buying the domain name and selling it. So unfortunately, I think there's a lot of things that needs to be done there and cleaned up there regarding indirect sales of domain name, which is what I would like to call it, which of course also have to do with some CCTLDs, of course, also have policies that makes it impossible for people to register domain names that they want, for example, in a country when they don't have presence there, that forces the registrants that do have interest in buying the domain name to use a proxy. So, which means that there are a lot of things there regarding indirect registration and indirect sales, which I think we, as the community, has not addressed enough yet.
Linda, if you've read the 2013 version, the RAA, the registrars are responsible for ensuring that the reseller, so you may have a problem, it's a breach of the RAA.
So I'd just ask if you finish that conversation offline. We'll take the last question, Ariel. Thank you.
Sarah Liang, for the record, actually, Murray McCurcher, the remote participant, raised his hand. So Murray, can you speak up via audio? All right. I'll connect with him afterwards, but I will read for him. Use this simple question, but what is the issue when in Whois record that a domain name has an unsigned DNSSEC?
That they have or have not?
Have.
Okay. If it's the case that a domain, according to the Whois record, have DNSSEC, that means that the domain, let me take it back. It means that the manager of the technical manager of the domain name has created a key by which the domain, directly or indirectly, is signed and has passed the key to the registry. So that the domain has DNSSEC means that the registry has received the key from the child domain. Unfortunately, the reason why I'm a little bit detailed here is because I do expect that the person actually asked a very detailed question here. It doesn't say that the domain itself is signed. It says that the parent received the key from the child zone.
Well, that brings our session to a close. So on your behalf, I'd like to thank Patrick very much for giving us the time and look forward to running into... I'm sure a lot of you will run into him in the corridors and you can ask him further questions there. Thank you very much, Patrick.
Or other members like Jeff and Jaap and Julie. Thank you very much.
Yes, we are starting the meeting right now. Please take your seats or at least stop talking about other things around the table. The meeting on ALS criteria and expectations is starting. We're starting with the group on Design Team A, the application process. That group is led by Natalie Peregrine. Natalie is here, and she has 3.5 minutes left before she has to go back to the GNSO. If you could turn your attention to her, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I'm Natalie Peregrine from staff. We're working on Design Team A of the ALS Criteria and Expectations Task Force. This was studying the application procedure for at-large structures, so from the beginning of the application through to the ALAC vote. It was quite interesting because we managed to study it from a staff perspective, because I had a little insight on that, a community perspective, see what where we're lacking community input or where there were issues, and then looking at the application for the procedure itself as a theoretical procedure and seeing how to solve it. So that's the other table. Thank you. It was quite hard to pick a focal point, so rather than do that, we decided to go with the obvious issues with the procedure as it stands now. So to be brief, we realized not all ALSs, potential ALSs, were equal in the information they could provide to us, as being staff and community, in order for us to consider their application. Some of them had inactive websites, some of them were less responsive. This was not a reflection on their value or their own activities as organizations. So we need to, as staff, I think first, big effort to make sure we manage to get as much information during the application procedure so we can present a fully informed applicant organizations. The next step was community input. There were several elements there. The main one for us and for you here was the ALAC members and the vote period, and the fact that, I don't know, when there is an application received, once regional advice is, ALAC members receive a voting package on the same day as the vote starts, and the vote period is for only a week. So this is a very brief period. It doesn't necessarily allow for all subsequent ALAC members may have to be answered. So we decided that a prior week before the voting period open would be ideal for discussion periods. We also discussed how various railos are different in the way they handle both the actual due diligence document they receive and equally the discussion afterwards with railo members regarding the regional advice. So we had a lot of talk about that and how to streamline it in order to make sure that we are not violating any previous rules and regulations. It appears we are. So we will be, we need to work more on that one, but we will be shortly putting forward a document of recommendations to railroad leadership in order to streamline the due diligence treatment and how regional advice is gathered. The next element on this was a certain lack of flexibility in the application being on regards when to put an application on hold. Now we have a three-month application period, which allows for no flexibility. We have had recent instances where a hold period would have been needed. This could have meant maybe the applicant was not responsive within the due diligence time frame. It could have meant that railroad leadership needed further time to discuss an application during the regional advice period. And again, ALAC members would have needed a lot of time to make an informed decision before they voted. So we've resolved a few of those issues with the ALAC week. We still need to work on that. We also need to decide, and your input will be here, what would be an ideal hold trigger, who decides what the hold period is, and when is it satisfactory to start the application procedure once again. On a more uplifting note, we decided that we need to focus on engagement from the very start of the application procedure. Right now, staff has put together an onboarding process. It's low. We're very pleased with what we have, but we need to put more effort in it. It only starts once the organization is accredited. I think we believe within the DTA that we could do that from application, which means distilling information to the applicant from the ICANN Learn website about at large and ICANN as a whole. It means also making sure that maybe the applicant could take part in service in the various RALO monthly meetings. They could start discussing. They could even be through those RALO monthly meetings, maybe a mentorship system put in place, that suggestions. And equally, we feel strongly that RALO leadership should be encouraged to get in contact with the applicant from that, but it would give a sense of belonging that maybe these... And apologize for the speed, but that was...
Olivier. Yeah, thank you very much, Alain. Alain Blanc speaking. One of the problems I have is I can't read the bottom of the sheet. It would have been helpful to maybe shrink it. The AC room doesn't work. It's dead.
So. This is Sarah Lam for the record. Actually, we were informed there's serious technical issues happening in the U.S., so it's impacting our audio and video and internet speed in the AC room. There's a delay, so we apologize for all those inconveniences.
Blame the ALAC.
Better still, blame the U.S. Any other questions for Natalie before she runs off? Very much. There's another question from Olivier.
Thank you very much, Alain. Olivier Clapin-Leblanc speaking. So I'm very happy to see the work proceeding with this. Is there going to be any additional work as to when an ALS gets accepted, what kind of information and welcome welcome package they receive, or it's a package or whatever it is, or is this not the remit of this working group?
The remit of this working group is to make sure that we have effective ALSs to the extent that we can control it from the various processes. So I would think that, yes, is an issue. It is not one we're looking at right now. We will be glad to assign it to you as soon as we're ready to look at it, though. Which presentation are we ready to do next? Okay, we are now doing... We will now do DTC, the ALS criteria, that the criteria we were looking for to admit an ALS. Call upon Alan Greenberg to come to the front desk and present it. Is he around? I haven't seen him either. All right, let us start. Enough frivolity. This is Alan Greenberg speaking for the record. Olivier has visual proof for those not in the room watching on his little tiny phone, which I guess is a not quite a smartphone, but it's not a dumb phone, it's not a smartphone, it's somewhere in between. Could make comments between compare that to Olivier, but but we won't, because that would be cruel. I'm sorry, some of us have been doing this for many hours today and are getting a little bit slap happy. Okay, ALS criteria. The whole purpose of this game is that when an organization applies, or even when they look at what they're going to have to do if they apply, that they will be able to provide information to convince us that they will be a good ALS, a productive ALS, one that is engaged and is contributing to the at-large process and to the IT processes. So it's quite clear we cannot provide them with a 400-page questionnaire. They don't want to fill it out. We don't want to read it. So can we condense the things but identify the issues that we think are important? And like in Natalie's case, where her group looked at the current process and said, what are the problems, we have done the same thing. Point number one, the current criteria is relatively limited. It says an ALS must be self-funded. That was ICANN's very initial bylaw requirement to say, don't expect any money from us. And that we are not changing. That doesn't mean ICANN won't provide some money on occasion. It should not be presumed. Second is that the organization be largely led by individuals. That might mean there is government involvement, that might mean there's industry involvement, but the decisions should be made largely by individuals. Okay. Again, that is a bylaw requirement right now. Now, I will make it clear, we are changing enough things, we will likely be changing enough things that the bylaws will have to be revised. So they are not sacred. These two, we believe, are still correct and should be applied. One of the problems that we have had on an ongoing basis with ALSs is they seem to disappear, or at least our contact with them vaporizes. So instead of asking for a contact, some RALOs have said two contacts. AP RALO uses three and has had spectacular success with actually knowing who their ALSs are. So we think this is a really good idea, and we're stealing it from them. So we're going to ask for three contacts. That is three live human beings, hopefully all of whom will respond to email when we send something to them. But in the worst case, at least one of them will. Number three, the contact need not be the leaders. We're well aware of the fact that someone who happens to be president of an organization or executive director or chair or whatever they call it may not be the person who cares particularly about ICANN. Certainly may not be the person who wants to receive 100 emails a day that we seem to send out on sometimes. So they need not be the leaders, but we want assurance that the leadership of the organization has knowledge of the application and supports the application. We're not asking for notarized statements. We just want people to tell us that. The reason is simple. We have had cases where the contact person disappears. For whatever reason, their email is no longer valid. We contact the head of the organization because we find their website, and they say, ICANN, ALS, and they don't know anything about it. And someone has applied with their name, but is really only acting as a sole actor. Number four, whoever is listed as the contact must actually have ability to interact with their membership, because one of the whole purposes of the contact is not just to talk to us on occasion, but to be able to relay messages to the membership and perhaps back if the membership has any interest. In some cases, that might be addressed by simply giving us the name of their own mailing list, and we'll simply include it. But probably that's not the right answer in many cases. We talked a lot about how big an ALS is really an ALS. Now, we have some ALSs that are a modest number of people. I think one of the people around this table said her ALS is only 7 or 8 people. But they all care passionately. We have ALSs that have tens of thousands of members. We probably have some ALSs that have many thousands of members, maybe even tens of thousands, none of whom have ever heard of ICANN or being an ALS. So the numbers don't count as such. The level of, however, we believe that the membership should be larger than just the 3 contacts that are listed. Should be larger than the 2 contacts listed if there are only 2 contacts listed, because there are only 2 people in the ALS. Should be larger than the board. You know, if the board of an organization is the whole organization, I got a problem. But it's a judgment call, and it's a judgment call that will have to be exercised by the RALO in doing the first triage and giving the RALO opinion, and by the ALAC if it's a questionable issue and has to be looked at. And lastly, we are going to ask, and this sounds like a no-brainer, and perhaps I certainly wonder why we never did it before. We're going to ask, why do they want to become an ALS? What is the intersection of their interests and those of ICANN? When you look at how ALSs were recruited initially, and still to some extent, they are organizations that have often a passionate interest in the Internet or some aspect of the Internet, but not necessarily a lot of care about domain names or the arcane things that we do within ICANN. So we're going to ask. And that's as far as we've gotten, and perhaps as far as we will get. Because, again, we don't want an exhaustively long list, but we want to make sure that we have some cheating. We have Tijani and Shun.
Thank you very much, Alan. I will repeat the same question of this morning. We need criteria or objective metrics to say if this organization is important or not, or ALS is important or not. So you spoke about the number of members. Where you will put the bar? You spoke about activity. How will you assess it? Are the metrics? This is very important, because we may put any criteria. We need the metrics to assess it. Thank you.
Thank you, and we will try. How well we'll do, I don't know. Cheryl, for clarity, you said 5 minutes. That means you have to leave in 5 minutes?
Maybe subtle.
Good.
Thank you, Alan. This is Sean for the transcript. I just want to mention that whether we like it or not, number is a very important factor, or one of the important reasons why we are actually recognized as Maltese. The number of ALSs we actually have on paper. Seeing those dots around is actually one of the things that people look at and feel, oh, we have so much membership. Apart from that, I recognize that we also need to make sure that those ALSs are actually active. So I think there's need for balance between numbers, whether we want to reduce the number or we want to get activity from them. I think we need to... one of the criteria was talking about they need to get people that apply need to get confirmation from their leadership. I think we need to face the fact that some people apply because they have no other means of applying. And they really did not want to engage their organization in the first place if they had another means of applying. So I think we need to start considering whether we could have individual options for registration. Maybe this is actually going to be at the RALO levels, consider, but I think we need to be very flexible on the requirement that we are putting up for the organizational confirmation from, leadership confirmation from the organizations. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Unfortunately, we have about 3 minutes because the last session did go over significantly. Sorry. We have two more sessions, fourth of which is individual members. I'm afraid we probably are not going to get to them today, and we'll somehow try to fill it in later in the week, because it is an important subject. I have no more questions on this particular one. Eduardo, you have 30 seconds.
When we're looking at this is Eduardo for the record. I will look at what other organizations do for their own members. I mean, can we learn from them as far as if they do this criteria? Do they apply, once they get to be members? Do they follow up with them? How do they do it? Like, I'm thinking about NPOG and the end user, NCU, stuff like that.
All I can say is if you have experience in those particular areas, then join the task force and help us. Okay, unfortunately, is closed right now. We will be continuing this discussion later in the week. Time to be announced. Closed, and then I will actually take a breath for 1 minute. Sorry? There was a remote question.
This is Ariel Leon for the record. There's a remote participant, Alexi Antelis from Internato of Venezuela. Question, they do not believe it necessary to define a policy for monitoring the tasks carried out by ALS.
Noted. Make sure that's entered into the record. I was just looking around for my co-chair for this next session, who I'm told is not here, but Rina will be here in a moment.
Yes, I can always.
Yes,
it's. You're welcome. Have Byron as far. Right now.
Okay. You're no longer.
No. I was orange. I was feeling ill.
One of the few explanations.
I'm told we're having a switch of staff to handle the remote participation and screen. We'll be ready in a moment.
No, sorry. Staff is ready. I am staff.
We have Gisela acting as all three people we normally have sitting there. No doubt. All right, thank you. This is the session, joint session between the ALAC and the CCNSO. We have an intervention from staff who wants to interrupt my introduction. My mouth is not working very well anymore. Go ahead, Gisela.
Sorry, Alan, if I may, just to remind everyone, because we do have new people here today, we do have simultaneous interpretation, so please do say your names when you speak and speak at a reasonable speed just to allow for accurate interpretation. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan Greenberg speaking. Just in case my voice is not recognized yet. This is the joint session between the CCNSO and the AOER. Chair of the CCNSO, Byron Holland, could not be here with us at the moment. So if for those who are mathematically inclined, we have Byron Prime. Byron Prime Prime. Byron Prime Prime Prime, who will be leading part of the operation. I will let each of them introduce themselves for the CCNSO, where they're from. Then the agenda is a moderately short one, which will probably go on for well past the period of time that we have, if we allow it to. For the ALAC here, I should point out, there's an ALAC and board cocktail immediately following this session, so you might have a vested interest in being on time. We do not have an ALAC and board cocktail, as my schedule shows. Oh, that's an hour later.
Yes.
Oh.
We can still buy an hour.
Okay. But there is something else going on that I'm supposed to be attending, so I will leave at 30 minutes past the hour. Now that we've wasted a significant amount of time on schedule, the items on the agenda are significant ones. That the first item is the CCWG proposal and how each group intends to handle it. Second is the submission of the final report on geographic georegions, and time permitting, an update on how each of us look at the use of country names, country and territory names as TLDs. And I think I'm turning it over. Well, let's do introductions first.
Hello, my name is Katrina Sataki. I'm the vice chair of the CCNSO. And on behalf of our chair, I have to apologize. He cannot be here because of his illness, but I hope he will get well very soon. And if you see him and have any questions to him, just use your opportunity. As you can see, there are three of us trying to cover up for Byron. We have some more CCNSO councillors here present. Again, I have to apologize that due to some clashing sessions, they had to cover other, had to be in other sessions. And somehow always happens lately, especially lately, with some unexpected sessions popping up to very quickly reshuffle. Talking about CCWG proposal and where the CCNSO is now and what CC thinking about it, we are having two very intense days, meeting days in front of us. That's Tuesday and Wednesday. And during these days, we'll try to cover as many issues as possible, just to brief our community and to see how to feel, think, and how we're planning to proceed. But this morning we had a council meeting where we discussed the status quo and potential scenarios and the way we're going to reach a final decision. And here I'd like to give the floor to Bart and ask him to give a short summary.
Thank you. My name is Bart Boswinkel. I'm a senior advisor to the CCNSO. One of the issues which is probably very important to understand in order to understand, say, how the CCNSO is viewing, looking at the CCWG proposal, but also at the CC, and we explained this in the past, is that the CCNSO effectively conveys, you could say, first one is the CCNSO Council, and the second one is the CCNSO membership. And the CCNSO membership is just a subset of all CCTLDs. Currently, there are 256 CCTLDs and 156 are member, and we have a new application. So hopefully they can prove it on Wednesday. But in order to, going back to the structure, why it's important, is at the end of the day, and I think this was clearly shown in BA, CCNSO membership needs to support the proposal itself. It's not the CCNSO Council who makes the final decision. CCNSO membership, effectively the wholesale or the broader CCTLD community. So in order to take a formal decision by the CCNSO Council as an administrative body, allowing submission of a proposal to the board in this case, it's they need to have sense of support from the broader CCTLD community. Now, in order to get a clear picture, and those at ICANN meetings, not all CCTLDs are present, and not all CCTLDs are involved in the works of the CCWG. Were not involved in the CWG, CCNSO has organized jointly with the regional organizations, a, as Katrina alluded to, a set of sessions in order to inform, discuss, and identify potential issues say across the CCTLD community during the upcoming 2 days, resulting in an understanding, at least, for where are the potential issues for the community and trying to communicate this to the CCWG as well. Due to the fact that the CCWG has not finalized its proposal in time for, and for various reasons, and very aware of it, for the Dublin meeting, the envisioned decision-making process has to change. And one of the reasons is the overall timeline for IANA stewardship transition. It is not just this proposal, but it's also the implementation phase and the approval phase by the NTIA and Congress that determines that overall timeline. And as a result, the Council looked at it that now there is an opportunity for intersessional meetings, or there is maybe a need for intersessional meetings and intersessional decisions. Going back to what I just explained about the role of the CCTLD community and the CCNSO Council, that's going to be very CC community, and that's going to be a very intense discussion probably on Wednesday afternoon. On level, does the Council feel comfortable take the decision as, yes, the CC community supports the final proposal, and therefore it can be submitted to the board as part of the whole transition package? And the reason for putting
it's
this on the agenda...
Hours.
Sorry? For putting it on the agenda is, first of all, to explain, but also to understand how ALEC views a potential inter-meeting, and if there are any issues on the ALEC side in the approval process. It's more or less the outcome of this morning's discussion, and not just this discussion, but the preparation of Dublin and over the next months.
All right. In terms of how we view and how we will go about approval, the ALEC is probably capable of doing an approval intersessionally without a formal meeting. Given the level of controversy, given the various, sometimes strong opinions that we had on many of the issues, I would not feel comfortable doing that. I believe a face-to-face meeting would be quite appropriate and very useful in making sure that any decision we make is solidly has the backing of the ALEC and hopefully the groups that we represent. That being said, these meetings are regular. I can meet relatively well ahead of time, and doing something on pretty short notice will almost surely be very close to the holiday season for many people. It's going to be a challenge. There's no question about that. But if it's a choice of doing it with some remote participation or not doing it, we haven't discussed this at all, would go ahead and try to do that. Really crucial thing. And not want to glibly be accused of a two-hour teleconference where some people may not even fully understand. We've had discussions over the last day, and is, I'll say, almost frightening in that sat in the same CCWG meeting and have had completely different opinions of what it is we decided or we're discussing at any terminology, and the concepts are confusing enough to many people that there's not a lot of clarity. I may believe things are completely clear, and someone across the table will tell me, no, that isn't what it means at all, in a very, very radical way. So I would think a face-to-face meeting would be appropriate, all of which is completely unknown. There is a precedent, the 2003 change was done with an intersessional meeting in December. It was a lot smaller ICANN and a lot of different ICANN. I understand that. Anyone else want to get in on the ALAC side? Jun?
Thank you very much. Thank you for the quick comment and intro. I just want to, I hope I'm not putting you on your seat by asking this question. How does the CCNSO currently understand, what do you understand to be the current status of the CCWG proposal at the moment? Thank you.
Do you want me to answer it? In flux. Let me be more explicit. This morning at the council session, we had one of the co-chairs of CCWG, and we had one of the co-chairs of the CWG. And it's very clear that, say, the CCWG is putting in a... So whatever we call a status is overtaking time, maybe within the hour. So up till Monday, probably, that the CCWG is really working on it, and that's the good... Our sessions on Tuesday and Wednesday, And we have a lot of people who are deeply involved in the CWG's work, doing the presentations, explaining to our or to the CC community where they're at, where are the issues at that stage. The good thing in that sense is at least to understand where there are areas of agreement, where there are areas of disagreement, where there are further work needed. Ultimately going into, say, that's what the CC Council knows and what the community knows by now, is there will not be a decision at this. That's why I said influx.
Any other specific questions? Bart, let me ask you or anyone a question. By the way, if there are any other CCNSO members who would like to sit at the table, we will clear spots for you if you are so interested. There are a number at that site already. You had to, if the CCNSO were doing this alone, what kind of accountability model would you have ended up with? Model, and I'm using the model with a lowercase m. I'm not asking you to design, you know, something major. So where, what would your endpoint have been? No, I am asking you as a keen observer.
Let me explain you, say, one of the... let me turn the question around a bit. One of the major issues, and that's interesting. What people, most outsiders are not aware of, there are a lot of internal rules within the CCNSO. And at the time the CCNSO was created back in 2004, we had a document. It's called the rules. If you would look into the bylaws, it's linked with the bylaws, all around the accountability of the council. One of the reasons why the council is what it is and how it plays its role right now as a tribe is because of this rule. You would go back to the proposal or to the resolution from the council in Buenos Aires, explicitly stated this resolution only becomes effective 7 days after publication, because in between the publication and there is the opportunity for CCNSO members, one of the things that we, as far as I avoid, having votes, because that's rules and process with quorum rules, etc. Seek the consensus of the community in order to move forwards, and that's why it's always been the case, and that's why it comes up.
For the record, I did ask you, Bart, or anyone. Ultimately, you are one of the charting organizations, and you need to either accept or reject proposal. And I was just asking if you were in a position to share something that you think might have been an acceptable answer, that feel free not to not answer that. Olivier had a question.
Thank you very much, Alan. Olivier Crépin speaking. And first, I have a question to our chair regarding the question itself. CCWG proposal and how each group intends to handle it. Is this just dealing with process, or can we actually ask questions on the content?
I think we've heard what the non-answer is going to be from the CCNSO. I certainly am in a position to answer on behalf of the ALAC where we think we want to be. I can certainly describe our process for making the decision. Essentially, it was one of the items of the agenda I hadn't gotten to, but I'm not quite sure what Olivier is asking.
So I have a question about the position of the CCNSO at the moment. Olivier, speak. This morning, the ALAC, I think it was this morning, the ALAC voted to reverse a decision it had, decision it had made in one of its recent statements supporting the membership. Burst it. I then went to the GNSO room next door. There was lunch. Tremor hit the room. The plates broke. Everything was an absolute mess. And it was horror. And I wonder if this sort of announcement would get the same sort of response in the CCNSO room.
You will have the response from individual CCTLDs. And there is, and that's why we need these 2 full days. As a CCNSO support person, I don't know the sense of the room. Because if you would go back to, for example, the public comments, and I think that's an indication, you will see that some CCs have supported those fulsomely, some have some remarks, and some are very strongly opposed. And that's the debate we need to have within the CC community where they are. And that's why the CCNSO, for example, never... They're very reluctant as such to make a statement. For example, the exception was something because that was the result of other work on the ICG proposal. Maybe you have seen it. There was a specific reference to ICP1 and how it's been treated in the CWG proposal. That's where the CCNSO Council stepped in. But that's the only time they do it, if there is a clear position from the community. And we don't know the clear position.
Maybe for the benefit of the CCNSO people here, I'll outline a little bit about process and where we are in substance. The ALEC has taken a position from the very start of this that we were not in the camp of those that said we need strict legal ability and we have to put shackles on the board. Yes, we have found a number of problems with board decisions over the years. In many cases, I don't think there would have been very widespread community outrage over it, because in many cases, what one group is outraged with, another one claps their hands and says, great. So we believed the board has always had the ability to say, SOs, you don't have directors anymore. But they haven't. Yes, they've blown it on a number of individual decisions, not necessarily on changing the overall structure and philosophy of ICANN. So we were looking for an American expression, probably was never appropriate, a kinder and gentler ICANN, one with more community input into the process. That being said, on the current proposal, which was a membership proposal which seemed widely accepted within the CC, board had not at that point spoken. We were prepared to support it, although we had a number of very particular problems we wanted to see fixed. We made it clear that it wasn't our preference, but we were not going to be one of the chartering organizations that vetoed it. We were feeling quite flexible. Yesterday... and certainly Friday, there is back on the table a designator model, a little bit less powerful and onerous than as a membership. The membership model has a number members have a number of abilities, including unilaterally changing bylaws and dissolving the corporation, vetoing budgets without necessarily taking any responsibility. That worried us. The designator is back on the table at this point. Don't know whether the board will support it or not. But they've made it clear they won't support the membership organization. And we've taken a rather pragmatic view. No matter how bottom-up the process is, ultimately, to effect the change, the board is going to have to approve bylaws. And the board has a fiduciary duty to not approve bylaws that they think are going to harm the organization. So although the board's approval is not necessary for the CCWE proposal to go forward, ultimately, they're going to have to agree if the organization is going to change its bylaws. Really a pragmatic view. It may not be fair. So at this point, we said, since there are other options on the table formally in the CCWG, we are withdrawing support of the membership model. It could go back. If the whole world changes and everyone loves membership, then we will certainly reconsider it. It's not a red line saying we'll never accept it. That's where we are right now.
May I ask you a question? Maybe it's on the sideline, and it's one of the items that will be discussed at the CCNSO, so this is for the benefit of... Do you think that as a result of your decision, the proposal will change, third public comment round will be necessary?
I don't believe that as a result of our decision today, third public comment will be necessary, but I believe... As a result of the almost inevitable change in the proposal, the board indeed is not going to accept a membership model, clear on that, then I believe whatever comes out by Monday afternoon is going to be substantively different and will require a public comment period. Comment period that could be slightly shortened, the UG ones, and I think the initials imagine that happening. I can imagine if there is a widespread belief that what is in the proposal is something that close to what we will end up with. That is, we're not expecting a lot of comments that will alter the proposal. I could see us going to the CCW, to the chartering organizations in parallel. Again, not putting an absolute vote out saying we accept something that we've seen, but if it's like this, are we going to be prepared for it? And then the process after that. So I think a public comment is inevitable. On the other hand, I think approval by the chartering organization here is also essential if the transition is to happen. Remember, after that, we need the bylaws in place. The NTIA has essentially said the bylaws have to be in place or all close. And another public comment then. We actually have to draft the bylaws, which, again, could be done. So I see it's inevitable that there'll be another public comment. Comments, questions? Sean.
Yeah, this is Sean for the record. I just want to twist the question again and try to say it in a different way. I'm optimistic, and I expect that we are all optimistic about the work of CCWG, especially in the next less than 40. However, if it happens that after the next 48 hours, there's really no, as I understand, your meeting is starting the next 48 hours, correct? Tuesday, right? Yeah. So if it happens that by Tuesday, there's really no clear direction from the CCWG on whether it's a designator or whatever it can be, or membership or something, are you guys considering to have an agenda item that actually looks at, formally agree on what you would not expect going forward? For instance, ALAC has formally presented something today, which I expect that would indirectly save some time, especially when they are considering those that have consensus for membership. So are you in the position to actually discuss that? Because we know that membership is still on the table today. So if it happens that it will be on the table by Tuesday, are you in the position to discuss that and get some level of agreement on your view on that particular model? Just like maximizing this face-to-face to have some view from CCNSO. Thank you
very much, Sean. It's Katarina Osataki, CCNSO. As I already mentioned, we have 2 days of meetings, and we have allocated enough time for discussions, for introduction, formal and informal, on these proposals. We definitely are in a position to discuss. So that's what we do at the CCNSO, and not only. We inform our membership, and we give them all the necessary information for a well-informed decision. If we are in a position to take a decision, really, first of all, it depends on how it goes, and we are aware that not all CCLDs, not all CCNSO members are present here in Dublin. So I don't think we will reach any decision. Yeah, but we'll definitely sense the feeling in the room, and after that we have this feeling, the CCNSO Council will have to
part. Maybe in addition is, and what is interesting, go to the CCNSO website. And going back to what I said, or what we discussed, in the community you have some strong voices in favour of, for example, at the same time in the same community you have some, so it depends very much, and these strong voices will present their position. This depends very much on open issues and where the CCW stage, what will be the outcome of that. Whether we say, whether they will be in a position or they won't, that's unclear. By Wednesday, we will know.
We seem to be questioned out on the CCWG. We're going on to an update of the GeoRegions report.
I'm not sure that I'm going to do much other than repeat to some extent what I did in earlier session. But do you want to, first of all, bring up to speed of where we are in terms of the administrivia? Because we've received in, of course, from GAC, and I know Rob and I are trying to put a few tweaks onto... There's nothing else happened while I've been doing other little things. Yeah, that's literally, it was a question raised yesterday, so these questions were prepared a lot earlier, and of course then it did happen to come up in session yesterday, but it may have people in the room who would like to ask some more questions. And of course we do admit, don't we, Bart, one has been around for a little while, hasn't it? It is just possible that someone might have on it. So if you'd like, Alan, to open the floor briefly.
I will open the floor briefly.
Side remark. Although most of you will not find the topic very interesting, most of you, I said, we're now talking about the CCWG and the CWG. If you would go back to its charter, you will see this is probably one of the first real cross-community working groups where you have all, say, and this one was structured where you had all the supporting organizations and advisory committees requested by the group the outcome of the report. One of the reasons why it took so long, because although, and that's what we've learned over time, that for requesting cross-community working groups and resulted in some advisory supporting organizations taking part with no interest, they stepped out, and then you had to find alternatives, etc. So, but this goes back, I think, 2008. That doesn't matter. Come on. Doesn't matter. But at the time, it was already structured in such a way, as you will see back in some of the cross-community working groups. Right? These cross-community working groups with charters well-defined have been around for quite some
time. Have to regularly remind them of that. That was show off the record. Seriously, if there are any questions, I'd be more than happy to field them online or in chat later. And, of course, we're here all week, aren't we, Bart? Thank you.
Anyone else? We have exhausted that topic. We have four more minutes. Choice to go on to the alternate topic or to adjourn?
I'm Annabeth Lang, CCNSO. And I'm here because I'm the co-chair of a cross-community working with how to deal with country and territory names in the next round. So we are two co-chairs from the GNSO and two FO and members from all the communities. And we do encourage people that are interested in already there. Thank you, Jane. So what we are trying to do is to, since we know that these names, the two-letter codes, the three-letter codes, and also names, short names, long names, whatever, were protected in the first round. So we first had a study group, and after the study group had finished, they advised or recommended to establish a cross-community working group further into this question to see if we could find work that was a compromise that everybody could live. So far, we have discussed the two-letter codes, and we have an initial recommendation that we leave them as they are now, not taken into the GTLD. So we'll see. Not both those already on the ISO list and also other two codes, since it's not we in ICANN that is, who will be new countries in the world, if it will, and world we are living in, that could easily happen. Then we wouldn't have a situation that the two-letter code, that country, decided by better than us, would be taken. So we agree that that will be our, at least for now, our suggestion. So now we are into the discussion of three-letter codes, and what we have done in the work, find some options that we think could be a possible way forward. We have written down all the different options, send the questions to all the chairs of the SOAC groups, ask them to think it through, that we can get a feeling is, what do you think? How should we use them? Should we use them at all? Should they be, some of them be protected? And I think you have got, or chairs here have got these questions as well. So we recommend is that all the different stakeholder groups look into it, send it to the chair. It has been discussed in the GAC today. We will discuss it in the CC tomorrow, no, Tuesday. And we have had, I had a presentation at the center of a regional group last week, and we are sending out a survey to get a feeling of how people look. So that's where we are now. And when we have finished this, then we will put down some suggestions and how forward, and then discuss the full names. That will be even more, I think. And then in the end, when we have all of this, we will make a draft and send out to a hearing for everyone again. So it's a long story, but I think this is so important that we should do it properly. Thank you.
Thank you. The ALAC has submitted a response to you with Maureen and Cheryl as the authors. You asked a number of questions. Should we do this or this, this or this with three-letter codes? And we answered yes or no. We are somewhat divided and noted a lot of the things that make it very. I'm not sure we helped you come to a resolution. Certainly, a few of the three-letter codes are recognizable as the countries they represent. Some of them are even less recognizable than the two-letter codes. One of them is already in use by an obscure TLD called .com. We have to stop that. That's true. I strongly suggest that you say that I can cancel that contract unilaterally. That will work really well, I'm sure. We can see the merit of opening up a lot of these to GTLDs. On the other hand, for the ones which are recognizable as country codes or related to the country, then we have an interesting perspective, an interesting situation where these GTLDs are now really competing with the country codes. In other cases, it take someone doing a PhD thesis to find the connection between them. So I don't think we've really helped you a lot, to be honest. Have presented the options and the issues that were relevant to our community. On the more general case, we have taken a strong position. For instance, there are continual comments periods being opened on the use of country and territory names second level on closed generics.
And we are only dealing with the first level in this working
group. I'm well aware. But our position of that is there are so many of them that are already used in the existing ones and in CCTLDs, it's hard to demonstrate any real harm. Okay. It's not as easy a call at the top level where we stand. Yeah. So,
Olivier Clapin-Oblon speaking, and a question to our chair regarding page that deals with that statement. I'm sure if it has been followed through. Maybe the page is not updated. Because though that it's been submitted, it says comment at the moment.
Maybe Ariel can tell me, because I'm confused. I thought we have not finished that. What is the current status?
This is Ariel, and for the record. We have a finalized statement uploaded. We're just waiting for Alan's direction whether we should go on a vote.
I suggest you find a new chair who keeps up on these things. Then we will take a vote on it soon. It still won't help you a lot, I'm afraid.
It's Annabeth again. I think that's okay, because our intention here, at least, is to show you all the complex issue we are dealing with. And it's better to think now and try to figure things out instead of having a huge paper at the end. Thought any of it about it before. Perhaps find some way. And also when we collect some have already said, why didn't you ask for that and that and this? So you can even kind of expand options. Perhaps it's other options that we haven't seen. So all inputs are valuable, and then we'll discuss later next time. This will, I think it will take time, to be honest. But
Olivier Crepin-Leblanc has...
Very much, Alan. Olivier Crepin-Leblanc speaking. The comment period says that it closes on the 9th of October. Are you still accepting... comments?
Yes, we are. Actually, I think really very short time. And meet here, it's a lot of presentations going on here on this issue. I just talked to Lars Hoffman today about this deadline, and we will expand it. And every chair of the SO get a mail from us telling us that. It's not.
Thank you very much. And if I can just follow up then and perhaps suggest we might wish to agenda for, is it a Thursday when we're voting? Might, because I think this has been it's been on the ALAC for a while, or drafters.
I ask staff to note that. Thank you. Anything else? We have run over a little bit, not as much as usual.
Thank you very much for having us.
And good luck to us all.
Yeah, that's what we need.
This session is... Sorry, Alan. Is this session now officially closed?
This session is now officially closed. Are we meeting here again for any public sessions at this point?